Have you noticed that politicians struggle to enact the things they run on? That regardless of who wins elections, lawmakers cannot pass whatever legislation they like. This is the Overton window at work. The idea, coined by the Mackinac Center's Joe Overton, describes the range of ideas that are politically acceptable at any time. And on the Overton Window podcast, we look as issues go from being unthinkable to plausible to policy and talk to the people who change what is politically possible. People are okay with taxing vices, which is why every state taxes cigarettes, some more so than others. And today I'm joined by my colleagues Mike Lefebvre and economist Todd Nesbitt of Ball State University. And they've got a recent study that estimates the amount of cigarette smuggling that goes on around the country. Mike and Todd, welcome.
Appreciate having us.
Is my assessment correct that cigarettes are taxed just because taxing vices is acceptable?
Well, it's not the only reason that the vices are taxed. You know, the Massachusetts Bay Colony back more than 200 years ago actually taxed this as a matter of sin. But and the nation itself also taxed whiskey as a matter of revenue generation. So there are two major issues going on with vice taxes. One is to thwart a purported sin, and the other is to raise revenue.
So this has been politically acceptable for a very long time.
Yeah, in fact, Iowa imposed the first excise tax on cigarettes, but it first had to make them legal. There was a prohibition against cigarettes and tobacco in combustible cigarettes in Iowa until that time. But the governor admitted up front it was the tax and the legalization in tax was designed first and foremost to raise revenues rather than address public health concerns.
So that's kind of interesting, the question between taxing it and banning it, which is these are socially unacceptable things. And so there is a tendency to say, look, just don't do them. We're not going to allow their consumption in a state. But there's also this, well, it's not so awful that we think we should ban it, but we do want to penalize you for it. Is that what's going on with cigarette taxes?
Yeah, that was considered a bonus in Iowa and other taxes in other states, is that they could thwart sin, but not so much that all the revenue would disappear. They could use the revenue for different things. Right here in Michigan, you know, years ago, there was a budget hole and it was filled with a cigarette tax increase.
Todd, why do states tax cigarettes at different rates?
Certainly populations differ, you're going to see the willingness of some folks in different states have different preferences where they're going to oppose cigarettes consumption more. Maybe the more dense populations, there's more secondhand smoke, and so you may see a tendency to try to increase or discourage the taxation or discourage the consumption more, so taxes are higher there. So there's going to be a lot of different reasons. But also, I think that the different states have different ways of funding all of their expenditures. And you can do it through taxation of income, property, and certainly a lot of sins, so-called sins as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
James, if I could just add on top reference, sort of cultural norms across the country. And in the 1970s, something like 42% of America smoked cigarettes, and it's down to 12% or less today. So there have been changing attitudes towards consumption and that have had a very powerful influence, as much, maybe more, than excise taxes imposed at different levels across the country.
Well, I want to bring up that issue, which is, one of the stated goals that lawmakers have is that they want to encourage people to stop smoking. That's the goal. And you say that there are fewer people smoking these days. Are cigarettes effective at getting people to quit?
Here,
so go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, cigarette taxes, the higher you, and the greater preference for smoking is what remains. So in a state with a $4 per pack excise tax, raising it by another 50 cents or a dollar or more, you're only taxing people who have such a strong preference for the product that they're likely to turn to an illicit market to obtain the cigarettes that they want or nicotine that they want. regardless of the excise tax. They'll turn to an illicit market or even shop in what they think is a store that's providing them with legal cigarettes, but have a store owner that's actually engaged in the illicit market.
And I think that's really where our research comes in, is that we're trying to provide an estimate of, well, how much of that the consumption that's still there is being obtained through either long distance smuggling through the stores where a lot of the consumers don't even know that it's illicit, and also some of that cross border shopping, trying to avoid high taxes in your home state and shopping across the state border and bringing it home to consume for yourself.
How much smuggling is there?
That certainly varies by state. We see California just recently took over number one, regardless of how we measure it, whether it's total number of packs smuggled or percentage of consumption or total revenue evaded, essentially. California is right around 52-53% of all consumption. State of New York is right there, who's been number one in our list ever since we've really produced it. Up until this most recent year, they're also right about 52% of consumption is from sources that are outside of the state.
James, Todd mentioned revenue. Absent smuggling, California would generate $1.4 billion more in cigarette excise tax revenue. Our top three states, California, New York, and Massachusetts, have two that have actually banned or prohibited menthol-flavored cigarettes and other flavored products. So they are sort of on a vanguard of trying to limit smoking in their own states.
Half is a lot. I mean, aren't lawmakers in these states concerned when the majority of cigarettes consumed in the state are illegal?
You would probably think yes. I think that some of the negative consequences that come along with the smuggling activity is certainly probably on the radar. We do see property crime. That's actually one of the reasons that our studies came about is related to some of the property crime and so forth that was happening up in Michigan. Some of the retailers and distributors were experiencing. And so certainly I think that that's on the radar, but if their primary goal is to raise revenue, as long as raising tax rates is still raising revenue, which in most cases it still is, even at really high tax rates, most states aren't really going to be overly concerned about the consequences of leading to this illegal markets there.
Should they be?
That's a good question. I think that there's so much extra crime that does come along with it. And a lot of times some of the and Mike, I think you can jump in here. A lot of state officials and even those in the police departments and correctional facilities are actually involved in this criminal activity, which does lead to some major concerns about overall legitimacy of trying to increase taxes further and further.
We've repeatedly noted that state officials cannot keep tobacco and drugs and cell phones out of their prisons and jails. So it's unlikely they'll be able to stop tidal waves of cigarettes from finding their way into a state, regardless of how much they try. I think in the last year or so, there was a story out of Terre Haute, Indiana, where a federal official inside the prison was smuggling cigarettes into a prisoner and being paid $400 per carton for that service. So there's enormous amounts of money to be made in the illicit marketplace if you're willing to take those risks.
Who are the people who are willing to take these risks? I mean, it seems like it's a pretty profitable opportunity to load up, a van with cigarettes in a low-tax state, find a way to sell them in a high-tax state.
And certainly that's happening. I wouldn't say necessarily overly easy, but those that are already involved in underground economies in general certainly can adapt their model to account for this and certainly buy cigarettes in lower tax tobacco states such as Virginia, say, where the tax is 60 cents per pack, and buy in bulk and then transport them, whether it be in a minivan with the back seats pulled out, but more likely in a U-Haul, and transport them up to high taxing states such as New York. and then sell them illegally in legal markets, right? So if you pay cash in a neighborhood bodega, a neighborhood convenience store in New York City, the chances are that you're probably getting a pack of cigarettes that has a Virginia tax-based stamp or another state.
James, we split our smuggling numbers, our tax evasion and avoidance numbers, into two parts. One is casual and one is commercial. The casual smugglers are typically just individuals looking to pick up a few cartons across a taxing jurisdiction to save a buck. The other part is what we call commercial or over-the-road smuggling, which is the larger shipments that Todd has referenced. And you know, the numbers on those depend on a lot, including proximity to a lower tax jurisdiction and population at the border.
Mm-hmm. So in thinking about like the bounds of the Overton window on this issue, I got to think that the property crime is the thing that really should, or the crime about this is the thing that lawmakers should really care about. I mean, yes, they're taxing these products to raise revenue for the state government, and you know, smuggling means they get a little bit get less of that, and they should be concerned about that. But the fact that these differential tax rates cause people to be harmed, cause all of these unintended consequences that are violent and that matter, that are lawless, that you know, that people are hurt because we're taxing cigarettes at different rates. I think that's the thing that ought to drive a little more attention. It ought to get lawmakers to care that there's so much smuggling going on in these states. What do you think?
Well, you know, we think so too. We've seen actual case or two that involved murder for hire over cigarette trafficking. Here in Michigan, a cash and carry customer, a retailer who went to his wholesaler to pick up his own smokes for sale, was hijacked and shot. Trucks, tractor trailer loads of cigarettes had been hijacked in the state of Michigan years ago, and we had a relatively high cigarette excise tax rate. In European countries where taxes are higher, you're seeing much more adulterated products and cigarettes that are made to smuggle. They have no legal market whatsoever. In fact, I actually have one of the packs here. No legal market whatsoever, but they're produced in these containers for illegal sale. The Jinling project products overseas, in fact, are so popular, they compete with your highest profile brands across the world.
How'd you get those cigarettes?
A federal officer gave them to me when I was giving a speech in Alaska. And he also told me about another pack of cigarettes that he was able to provide me. This comes from what used to be called the $5 man, where men on the streets would obtain cigarettes at a different taxing jurisdiction and then break them out of their packages into larger packages and sell them on street corners for $5. Now, due to inflation, he might be the $15 man now. I'm not sure, but it's been a while since I've obtained this original pack.
Todd, I kind of want to go back to the smuggling point. How do you know there's so much smuggling? I mean, this is not something that people are going to tell a surveyor.
Right. Absolutely. And so this is where we have to rely on the statistical model, right? So we get data on legal sales, tax-paid sales in each state, and then really in a two-stage model. So really, we're trying to build a model on consumption. So based on legal sales and various demographics, the major component of which is going to be with the percentage of the population, adult population who smoke, right? And so we build a model to try to predict what consumption is in that state. And so if our predicted consumption is greater than legal sales within that state, well, there's that difference. It has to be made up from somewhere. Those consumers had to buy them somewhere. And so the idea is that they most likely then had to import them from other states, right? So where likely the taxes are a little bit lower. If our consumption is lower than sales, then again, those sales had to go to somebody. And so it's likely that they are spilling over to residents of other states. And so in our second stage model, we take that difference of our predicted consumption and legal sales and relate it back to various tax differentials, populations along the state borders, and are able to then predict how much of that difference is due to those tax differences. And sure enough, states that have lower taxes tend to be exporting a lot of taxes to other consumers of other states, and states with high taxes tend to be net importers.
James, there are other scholars that have used other methods for measuring illicit traffic, and one of them is the discarded pack study. East Coast, West Coast, I think in Chicago as well, scholars will hire students, for instance, to go into census tracts and pick up discarded cigarette packs. And then they look for a tax indice, a stamp that tells them where taxes had been paid. And in some areas of the country, the smuggling or the non-taxed cigarettes that they collect are just massive. It's well over 50%. So we see this in New York. We see it in California, and our numbers sort of back up, or their numbers back up, just the degree to which cigarettes are smuggled, not just between states, but sometimes across national borders.
Those poor graduate students, they're out there, they're trying to get a degree in economics, and their job is now to dig through the trash in New York City. That's
dumpster diving.
Yeah. What should the bounds of the Overton window be on this issue? I mean, right now, it's current policy. We have some states ban particular cigarette products. Every state taxes cigarettes at some level. There's varying rates in cigarettes. Like, this is all current policy. It seems like there's the only thing that gets discussed in state legislators is how much more to tax and whether we should ban more products.
Huh? Yeah. So I think that here, you know, it's I think it's difficult to actually say, oh, this is the single tax rate that we should really have. You know, I think that it really goes back to the consumers. Right. So consumers are really the ones deciding to this, you know, looking at the tax rates, looking really at the price. Right. So they see the final price like, oh, that's really expensive. I can get it cheaper going across state lines or in these underground economies based on their own willingness. And so the fact that smuggling is so high is really a solid indication that consumers have determined on average that these taxes are too high. They should be rolled back some. And so I think that this activity is really the indication from consumers that they have decided that. And maybe our politicians should take that more into account than they actually are. Currently, we haven't seen that trend happening.
Yeah, I would argue that the window should shift according to the marginal costs and marginal benefits of enforcing the tax and related laws. I think Todd and I have spoken in the past about optimal levels of police enforcement. You don't want to necessarily swamp a state or local unit of government with police just looking for people who want to voluntarily associate with a retailer, for instance, to get a nicotine fix. We've seen harsher penalties associated with illicit narcotics, and it hasn't necessarily translated into a nation that repudiates the narcotics themselves. Todd, maybe you could speak to a little bit more about optimal enforcement. We've discussed this many times in the past, and still look for the data that might help us inform the public to a better degree.
Yeah, so I think that along these lines, it's interesting. You do see that when we increase taxes, it does lead to increased criminal activity, and you know, just smuggling itself is a criminal activity, but also all the other related. And so that increases demand for police enforcement in general, right? And so you know, those departments could then lobby for larger budgets, right, to try to thwart that. And so from a public choice kind of perspective, you know, actually higher taxes might be desirable by police forces in that regard, not necessarily by us as consumers or by us as citizens, because this prohibition by price, as we've kind of coined it, is basically creating more criminals out of otherwise law abiding citizens that aren't really necessarily doing harm to others in this regard, if they're just going across state lines. From us as consumers, optimal tax is certainly going to be lower, right? Not saying it's necessarily zero in this regard, because there is a need, revenue need from the state side. You know, whatever we agree is the role of government, we have to fund it somehow. But certainly from police force side, it may be that taxes from their perspective, they would desire them to be higher so that there's greater demand for their services and they get higher salaries.
Is it illegal to go across state lines to purchase cigarettes for personal consumption?
So there are legal limits. Most states, you per occupant of a private vehicle, you're allowed to have 2 cartons per person going across state lines at any given point in time. There's also annual limits on how much can go across state lines. If you go over some of those limits, you can make up for it on your income taxes by self-reporting, on the use tax there. But most people aren't really doing that. So if you're going over those annual limits and on any given trip, more than 2 cartons per person, then yeah, it's now actually illicit at that point. But there is some that is actually legal there.
And Michigan is what? You bring one stick across the border, technically you've broken the law. Now, the Michigan State Police aren't going to spend a lot of time and effort trying to bust someone who's brought a pack over from Indiana. But we do have one stick is against the law here. Todd brought up people buying the legal limit. You know, there are smugglers, I've heard this repeatedly on the East Coast, who engage in what's called smurfing, where they'll drive a van or truck to Virginia and buy the maximum legal amount of cigarettes that they can at a number of stores and then traffic them back into New York for resale.
Let me actually go back to some of the cross-border shopping a little bit. Kentucky and Ohio has historically had some issue there, like with Cincinnati being where it is, the Ohio River right there. Kentucky being a tobacco producing state, taxes tend to be a little bit lower. And so folks living in Cincinnati notoriously were going across the state line. Again, notice that there's only going to be so many different bridges, a very limited number of bridges right there. And there's historically a smoke shop that was just on the south side of one of those bridges. And people in Ohio, like the Ohio officials, knew that there is a lot of smuggling. And so at one point, they had police officers in unmarked vehicles parked in that smoke shop in Kentucky, in that parking lot, just watching people coming out with large sacks of products. And if they got into a vehicle that was with an Ohio license plate, they then radioed ahead to one of their fellow police officers in Ohio, "Oh, look for this car coming across the bridge." And then they would pull them over for a violation of the law there. And so there was a lawsuit. Ohio ended up winning. Kentucky ended up winning, and they had to stop that. But that's the type of activity that states were trying to enforce to try to limit some of this activity at one point.
Wouldn't all of these problems, and again, I think the fact that there are all these unintended consequences for violent crime stemming from this otherwise legal product, wouldn't all this just be less if states just worked with each other and said, "Look, we're going to get rid of this profit opportunity. We're going to tax cigarettes at the same rates."
In unicorn land, that would be great, right? Unfortunately, we're not there. To the extent, this is what I would expect if the states were to start to cooperate in this regard. It would not be necessarily at a reasonable tax rate. It would end up being at something closer to, say, New York's or Rhode Island's tax rate or Connecticut's, right? So we're going to be looking at $4 north per pack. And while that may actually dissuade some of the cross-border shopping, it also really just shifts where we're going to primarily get the cigarettes, right? So it's just pushing and kicking the can down the road a little bit. And instead of having the smuggling happening across states, most likely it's going to accelerate the amount that's coming in from overseas.
Mm-hmm. One of the things you mentioned is that people are smoking less these days. That does mean, even with smuggling, there's probably less smuggling than two because the demand's just kind of down. Why are people smoking less?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of different reasons, and I'm sure Mike can contribute to this as well. I do think that if you look at the younger generation, so those that are in their upper teens and who and then into their 20s, that generation just isn't consuming as much alcohol, isn't consuming much as much cigarettes. You know, their sin, so-called sin consumption is just lower in general. And so it's some social norms have changed. And I think it's diminishing some of that. You know, I think that the as smoking has reduced, vaping products are also accelerating, right? So, and probably among some of those, the same populations. So there's some substitution across. But overall, we have seen, I think, just a general trend of cigarette smoking has been downward for a large number of years. To some degree, I'm sure that certainly for those that are more price sensitive, higher cigarette taxes have had some influence there. But again, as Mike alluded to earlier, those that are still smoking at really high tax rates today, they're not price sensitive. They've already indicated that. So increasing a little bit more is really just not going to necessarily reduce their consumption, but shift where they're purchasing.
And it will also reduce their consumption of other necessary items like clothes and healthcare and education. There's a couple of studies out there, one at a municipal level and one broader, that provide evidence for that assertion. You know, we're at an 80-year low for cigarette smoking. The Generation Z does not like consuming alcohol the way previous generations have. So I think there's a combination of taxes and cultural norms going on here. It's ironic, too, because while cigarettes no longer have the draw that it used to have, perhaps due to taxes and people's opposition to it, something like 24 states have legalized marijuana while they're raising cigarette excise taxes. So interesting cultural shifts in opposite directions. So I hope that the net benefit is still a healthier republic. But Todd is also right in that the international border is something to keep an eye on if cigarette excise taxes continue to climb. And if the federal government goes through with a discussion to ban menthol or flavored nicotine products or tobacco products nationwide. It doesn't look like they are now, but during the previous administration, we got very close to a national ban.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that vaping is one of the reasons why people might be smoking less. And I know some lawmakers are considering banning those products. What determines whether those bans are successful?
If you look at the market where it is now, so before directly addressing that question, there's very few of the vaping products that are on the market. So if you go into any of the smoke shops or gas stations where people typically buy vape, the vast majority of the products that are on the shelves there are actually illicit already. We just don't know it. Right now there's only the most recent technology that was approved by the FDA was back from 2014. And it's basically, it looks like basically a stick. All the other fancier, more colorful technology that's there has not been approved by the FDA. And most of the liquids that are actually included in all of those have also not been approved by the FDA. And they're all being imported from mostly China. Some of it through containers where they actually did say it's vape product, but the port individuals don't know, really aren't informed about what is actually legal versus what is not. Some of it is actually being mislabeled as other products coming in. And so it's just getting through the ports that way. States are under no obligation to enforce federal law. And so notice that they have taxes on vape. And so as long as the retailers are paying their taxes, they have no reason to actually tattle on, any of these retailers because they're profiting off of it. And the federal government, just the FDA, doesn't have enough manpower to actually enforce this. So I think that all of that kind of indicates that, okay, we already have a very large underground economy in vape. It's overground. It's right in our face. Most people that even vape don't even know they're consuming illegal products. And so
I didn't know that. What you're saying is that, like, for this product to actually be consumed, it has to be authorized by the FDA because it's a nicotine product, and only nicotine products that go through the FDA can be sold. And you're saying that none of these are doing that?
Correct. Yeah, pretty much. That's the vast majority, it's basically the U.S. producers have actually, their products that they brought to the market here in the U.S. are the only ones, that, not necessarily the only ones, but the vast majority of ones that are truly legal here in the United States are the ones that they're offering. If it's another brand, it's most likely, not guaranteed, but most likely is one of the illicit ones.
You know, James, I've noticed a parallel between rising cigarette taxes and new taxes on vape, and that's the do-it-yourself. We've seen a substitution effect with regular cigarettes being so expensive that people substitute to roll your own. That way they can control how much nicotine they ingest based on whether or not they use a filter or not. And so if you go on YouTube, you can actually see do-it-yourself vaping lessons where there's all sorts of creative workarounds to get the product that they want.
The big driver, again, going back to the Overton window on this issue, where it's like the cigarette taxes are legal, vape bans, even though the products are already, or there are very few legal products from the federal or that have gone through the FDA. States are considering banning vaping products, but one of the bounds of the Overton window is set by health. I mean, the fact that cigarettes are bad for you is one of the key reasons why they are taxed and somewhat banned. And we haven't talked too much about that. That's a key part of the politics on this issue. How much are public health considerations going to matter on the question of whether states ban vaping products?
Well, it should be a major question because there's been studies that show that vaping can be a harm reduction strategy when compared to combustible cigarettes, those you ingest and inhale into your lungs versus receiving nicotine through a vaping product. Unfortunately, I've seen vape taxes equalized in states against their cigarette taxes, and I think that could be counterproductive. When California banned its raised its cigarette excise taxes, they actually delayed the imposition of vape taxes that were designed to be equal to their cigarette tax. And so I'm told that in the data, you can see people leave the combustible cigarette world for vaping, but return to it after the vaping taxes were imposed.
And looking at the liquid in the vapes, I know there's concern about some of the other additives that are in there. Some of them that are coming in from the illicit side that haven't been approved certainly may actually expose individuals to extra risk, right? That health risk there. And so we're not trying to actually say, oh, these are like panaceas here, right? So there's some risk there as well to health. But notice one of the key things that they certainly do not have in them is the tar, right? And so cigarettes, as part of the flavoring, you get the flavor largely from the tar. And, as anybody consumes that, that's getting into your lungs. And it's really the tar that actually is what ultimately leads to cancer. It's not the nicotine, right? And so, going to vape, you're avoiding the tar, you're not going to end up with cancer from that. And so I think that, having some legal market for, the vape product, again, as long as there's reasonable regulation there on the products coming in and some certification of, okay, like that the liquids are being investigated there, I think certainly can lead to a much healthier outcome than what we've seen.
So you two have the study that's out that's estimating cigarette smuggling, but that's not all that you do. I've seen you write op-eds. I've seen you testify on this issue. What are you doing on this issue?
Well, whenever a cigarette tax increase is proposed in the country, we have an opportunity to use our model to run a what-if scenario. What if this tax increase does go through? What does our model say will be the impact, not just on tax evasion and avoidance, but on revenue to a particular state? So in this year, we've looked at proposed increases for Maine, Rhode Island, Washington State, and we're available to run cuts or tax increases or tax cuts so that lawmakers are better informed about the decision they need to make.
For instance, Indiana just increased their tax effective July 1. And so we were able to try to predict what the effects of that tax increase is. They went basically from 99.5 cents up to 299.5. So basically $1 up to $3 per pack. And based on our estimates, I'm just going to look off to the side to make sure I give you the right numbers here.
Sure.
You
don't want to put all the cigarette smuggling numbers memorized. Okay, yes. Right. Clear. We live in the future. You can look these things up.
So 200% tax rate increase there. It's still going to lead to, based on our estimates, even with the smuggling, additional smuggling activity, still going to increase revenue by over 100% based on our numbers. However, it is also going to increase overall the number of packs of smuggled packs into the state is going to change by about 100 million packs. So an extra, Indiana has been a source state because of their tax rate tends to be a little bit lower than a lot of their nearby states. But they were smuggling out about 62 million, and now they're going to be smuggling in about 40 million. And so that's a huge change in terms of the consumer behavior. And so now, again, we're now introducing more of our consumers here in the state to underground economies, which perhaps there's a slippery slope there that can get involved in other aspects. But also, if I'm a consumer of cigarettes, I'm now spending every week an extra hour and a half on the road trying to get to the next state over to buy my smokes for the week. Notice that's now an hour, hour and a half less that I get to spend with the family or doing other productive activities as well.
Todd, Mike, thank you for helping us understand what's within the Overton Window.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Overton Window, a podcast from the Mackinac Center. Please subscribe and rate. For more, check us out at www.mackinac.org. That's Mackinac with a C, like the island.